This is The Huddle.
This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Presented by DUIHeroes.com.
The Huddle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Getting you guys ready with a two-hour preview of Seattle's Week 3 matchup on the road against the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota Vikings currently winless, but they have lost both of their games by 4 points combined, so it'll still be a tough matchup, and we'll dive into it a little bit more. But first, a very, very quick, and I promise this will be quick, look back at Seattle's Week 2 loss to the Tennessee Titans. That one was at home. Fans were returning to Lumen Field for the first time since 2019. They saw some good stuff, especially in the first half, carrying a 24-9 lead into the third quarter. Unfortunately, it all fell apart, and there is plenty of blame to go around. Let's talk about maybe one of the core of those issues. Dave, I heard plenty of people talking about specifically the run. Both sides of the ball couldn't establish it consistently to sustain drives on offense and couldn't stop it on defense. Is that one of your core issues when you look back at this loss?
Yeah, I think it's that. I also think that this is a very good team they lost to. Nobody wants to hear that. Here's what I would say about it. The teams that win in the NFL, they're the ones that do right the longest. Okay, and I said that on our show yesterday. And that's what they did. They just stuck with the run. Because early on, Henry was, you know, they were stuffing him pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then they just kept testing the defense, and they did it very methodically of, you know, play action pass. Okay, if you're not going to drop underneath that, if the linebacker's going to suck up and, you know, they're going to hit that little 19-yard post route to Julio Jones, when your linebacker did drop, then, you know, it didn't work for him. But you just had to do it over and over and over again. They were just going to keep testing you and running the ball. 35 carries for Derrick Henry. And they finally just wore down. So, yeah, it was, I don't know what happened with the gaps. I mean, you saw they got caught a couple of times. The one long run that he ran for a touchdown, you know, I thought that was on everybody. I mean, look.
I wanted to ask you about that because yeah. Jamal Adams was the one that drew the most arrows from Pete and Bobby in that.
Yeah.
But is that something where, because I didn't think it was that egregious. You know, there was a little bit of space there, and I know that his gap integrity is there. He's trying to make a play in there. Is that something where it wouldn't have been as big of a deal if he had told Trey beforehand, like, hey, I'm going to knife inside and, you know, need to fill in there?
Well, did you think that was his gap? Because, I mean, I thought that was his gap.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you can play your gap, but you can't get washed down, okay? And, you know, that's where I thought it was on everybody. The entire defense just got – and so now Trey Flowers, he's the cutback guy, right?
Right.
Well, it's easier to make a cutback block when it's like there's like 2 or 3 yards of space. There was like 12 yards there, you know? So, you know, everybody was, you know, got washed down. And, you know, I thought that was bad. And then also, you know, the other thing is there's a difference how you play a block when it's pass versus run. And when it's run, you got to be a little bit more stout and stay in your gap and not get washed down. You know, if you're on a pass rush, yeah, you can just fly around the edge and not really care about the space and everything. You're just trying to get to the quarterback. And he kind of broke underneath that tackle like that. Like it was a pass rush. And, you know, and I'm trying to remember if that was a play action pass or not. Or, I mean, was it a kind of a delayed handoff or whatever? But, you know, I felt like the whole defense was pretty much in on that one. But, of course, you know, the last guy that's left is Trey Flowers, and
right.
That looks bad. You know, same thing with Quandre Diggs. I think a lot of times the missed tackles are because people are trying to strip the ball out, and that's a big emphasis these days. But, yeah, it was just those are the kinds of things. And it just, to me, it was more about how Tennessee is a very well-disciplined, very well-coached team that just continually hammered away at you. And they, you know, eventually they broke open, and out comes, what, 500 and some yards, 182 yards rushing for Derrick Henry. So, yeah, it was a tough test for them that, you know, now everybody's going to look at it and say, hey, look, if you're, you know, and look at this team coming in here, Minnesota. I was watching Dalvin Cook. And by the way, never mind if he doesn't run for any yards, because they can just bring in Alexander Mattison and he can go get a career high like he did last year.
I was going to say, he's the one that racked up like 100 yards in one quarter alone or 112 something.
112 yards. Yeah, after Dalvin Cook went down. So
it's a good group.
Yeah, it is a good group. But I was looking at the Arizona game. Here are Dalvin Cook's runs: 16, 15, 14, 13, 12. 10, just don't like this. 9, 9, 7. I mean, this guy, I mean, he averaged like 6 yards a carry and only 3 yards against the Bengals. So, yeah, I mean, it's gonna be another tough test in the run game there, because this offensive line, they were just blowing huge holes in that Arizona defense. And so, yeah, that was disappointing to see. I mean, look, you're going to have to go toe-to-toe with really physical teams that are going to come in here like Tennessee and try to punch you in the mouth.
Big story heading out of the game also. The Seahawks had possession for just 22 minutes and 42 seconds total. The Titans dominating that. In the second half, the offense didn't get inside of Tennessee's 20-yard line, with the exception of, obviously, that one 68-yard bomb to Freddie Swain. I'm not counting it. It wasn't a red zone touchdown, and they didn't take that drive deep into the red zone because that ended up being a score on that play. So what happened to the offense in the second half? I know that we've been talking about Chris Carson only got 13 carries total in the game. The tight ends weren't too involved. Pete Carroll, though, asked about the tight end usage on Monday, said that, look, it doesn't matter who gets the ball if they're winning. The problem was, to him, that they just scored very quickly and never got a chance to establish that rhythm. What did you guys make of that?
You're never going to complain about points, okay? So first and foremost, you're never going to complain about points. But the problem is that when you are so – the margin of time of possession was so wide and so vast, with the Titans having the time of possession for over 40 minutes – and the Seahawks had time of possession for 20, that is never a positive thing. Could you win a game like that? Yeah, you can, but it's not necessarily the advantageous situation that you want when it comes to playing complementary football. That means that your defense is on the field for a very, very long time. And the problem with that being is that when you talk about the miscues and the mishaps that happen in the second half, it doesn't excuse them away, but you can explain a little bit of that when the Tennessee Titans are able to sustain these long drives and the Seahawks offense in the second half did not do that. They kept their defense out on the field for far too long, and the Seahawks offense needed to be able to establish some drives there. And if they establish some longer drives and convert some third downs, you might see a different outcome here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I looked at the drive before the half was just genius. And, you know, because they're a minute
perfect,
five,
yeah.
And well, they're back on their own 25-yard line. So you think, hey, are they going to – they did have two timeouts, I think. So, you know, they did have some time to see if it's going to work. But I just thought that was a beautiful drive, and it reminded me a lot of what they did in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And yet they got away from that. And like in the overtime possession, you know, two incomplete passes and then a safety – I'm sorry, that was a safety. But look, you know, where was that? You know, that to me, I felt like I don't know if Russ got maybe a little bit, you know, obsessed with throwing it down, but I saw it looked like Carson was out in the flat. You know, a couple of times there was a drag. I don't know. I just felt like for the first time since the playoff game against the Rams, that Russ had that look in his eye like he was confused and frustrated. Mm. So, and I don't know what he was expecting, throwing the ball down, you know, those two possessions before that, throwing it to DK. But, you know, there was none of what we saw in that drive before the half, and there was none of that what we saw in Indianapolis, where, you know, just kind of taking the check downs and being patient and then never looking like he was flustered or anything like that. So, yeah, that was kind of a shame, but I go back to that drive. That was pretty sweet, you know. And I mean, I think they still have the ability to do that, and hopefully going forward. But you know, just what did the ball travel 4 yards in the air to Travis Homer? He gets 11 yards. Mm-hmm. Same thing with DK, or I'm sorry, Tyler Lockett. You know, Rabel calls him Metlock now, and so now I can't get off of the names because it's a combination of the two names, but. Yeah, just an 8 yard, you know, little out route to him, and then 12 yards back to Freddie Swain. And so, yeah, it just looked like everything was, you know, working in concert. And then All of a sudden you get into the overtime period and it just wasn't there.
It did feel like two different offenses in a weird way.
Yeah,
it did. And one of the things that I had a frustration with was when it comes to running the football, it is a premium to be able to do that. It's a premium to be able to establish the run. It is a premium, especially in those situations when you're in 4-minute offense. I mean, they had the ball 5 minutes and 40 seconds left to go in the game. That is a prime opportunity for your offense to be in 4-minute mode and to be able to try and drain as much clock as possible to convert, to get a couple first downs. Unfortunately, you don't, you know, you have the fourth and one that doesn't, you don't know what's going to end up happening there because Damian Lewis jumps off sides. But to me, that was one of the other issues, was not adjusting your run game. I mean, the big, you know, 25-yard run that happened with Alex Collins, it came out in spread situations,
Love that.
It's spread runs. And so if you're having a hard time and you're not being as good in your 12-personnel run game, spread things out, go to 11-personnel, spread it out, see if you can run it that way and try and change things up. There's just some adjustments that did not happen there in that second half that I would have personally loved to have seen from this offense.
We'll talk a bit more about this. We'll also take a look ahead to the Vikings.
Why are you waving your fist in
the air?
That's the break sign. Let's go to break. By the way, this huddle is dedicated to Curtis Rogers.
He saved the world famous.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, the world famous huddle.
Shout out to Curtis Rogers.
I just had to send out a few late night texts last night being like, hey, guys, the huddle's tomorrow.
Well, because it's on a Wednesday and not a Thursday, exactly. We do have a switching around of schedules a little bit. Normally, for instance, you'd have Russell Wilson speaking on Thursday. Pete Carroll talks on Wednesdays, and that means you're going to hear from him today. That coming your way next.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost. We are getting you guys ready for the Seahawks Week 3 matchup. This one's on the road against the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings are one of the winless teams in the NFL at 0-2, but they might just be the best. They had a Week 1 loss to the Cincinnati Bengals, 27-24, that went into overtime, and then lost in a heartbreaker to the Cardinals last week, 34-33, collectively 4 points across both of those games. So they are going to be searching for a win. And by the way, they're going to have 3 consecutive home games, starting with this matchup against Seattle. When you look ahead to Minnesota for this Sunday, you guys, it's hard not to look at all the weapons they have on offense immediately, but that defense also loaded. Where are your eyes immediately going with this roster?
Yeah, to me, it's looking at their run game. And then Kirk Cousins, I mean, as far as completion percentage goes, he's kind of the king, man. I mean, he had the 1 year where he had 70%, I think. Is it him and Drew Brees?
Yeah.
That have only the only two to have over 70 for a season. So the one rap on Kirk Cousins, and, you know, I'm not sure how prevalent it is, but it used to be that he couldn't beat a winning team. And so, but, you know, I think he's a good quarterback, throws for 315 yards per game, 5 touchdowns. He was sacked 4 times. I don't think he has an interception this year. And then, you know, he's got a great run game behind him. So, you know, like I was saying, but, you know, the weapons, Justin Jefferson, in his second year, he was a first-round draft choice, and he got off to a really slow start. I want to say he made the Pro Bowl by the end of the year. He had good numbers. And, you know, in the very beginning, they weren't using him, and because I remember when we played him last year. But, yeah, you got him. You got Adam Thielen, who's the touchdown king. And, you know, like I said, a good backup in, you know, Alexander Mattison. But K.J. Osborne's the guy that's
leading the team,
making all the catches right now. So, yeah, they've got a lot of weapons there and a pretty good offensive line.
Yeah, the thing for me is I look at their defense. You talk about trying to establish a run. It doesn't get any easier versus this Minnesota defense. I know that they've given up a lot of points. You look at the Cardinals game this last week, and they gave up a bunch of cheap, easy touchdowns to Kyler Murray just in some scramble drill situations, total busted coverages. But outside of that, it's a pretty good group. They get Danielle Hunter back, their best pass rusher from a year ago, or from 2 years ago. He had a significant injury that kept him out all season long. Very, very good player. He'll be back on the edge. I don't know what Everson Griffin's situation is going to be. He was out with a concussion last week. But the guys on the interior, they got Michael Pierce. They've got they added Dalvin Tomlinson from the New York Giants of this last year. Sheldon Richardson is another very good player. So from the interior perspective, this is a pretty good group that's not gonna give you easy run situations. They're not just gonna give it up to you. So from a total standpoint of this team, this is going to be a tough battle that you have on your hands, Stacey.
Well, and that's one of the weird things. Their defense, kind of like Seattle in that way, you've got a defensive-minded head coach and some stars who can be a lot better than what you've seen on paper. So they've given up 27 points to Cincinnati, 34 points to Arizona. But like you said, they've got Eric Kendricks, man. He's phenomenal. They added Patrick Peterson to the secondary to help them. So they got Patrick Peterson, Harrison Smith, Xavier Woods in there as well. So, I mean, they've got a good group collectively. I think this is going to be a test on both sides of the ball. The way that I was initially, and this is obviously a mistake on my part, the way that I was looking at the Tennessee game was it was going to be the defense versus Derrick Henry and that it would be able to be a shootout because that secondary with Tennessee is so poor. And the way that I miscalculated that was obviously not expecting Seattle's offense to fall apart in the second half. It was a shootout, but kind of for all the wrong reasons because Seattle got kind of flat there. I think with this one, I'm looking at it as a battle on both sides of the ball. For both Seattle's offense and their defense, there are some unique matchups here.
There are a bunch of unique matchups when it comes to this. So,
and I'm going to interrupt you. Sorry, Jake. We are taking you guys right now to the podium where Pete Carroll is speaking with reporters.
Does the best job this week getting ready and preparing and all of that. Have best chance to win. So the practice is really important this week and starts today. The Vikings have been very explosive on offense, been very efficient in scoring and throwing the ball all over the place and running the ball well. So it's a very difficult challenge for the defense. And Mike has always been hard, with what he does on defense for them. So it's a really tough matchup, their first home game, all that kind of stuff. I am glad that we've been on the road in a stadium similar. They're different and unique in their own ways. But still, I'm glad that our guys have, the Indy trip helped us in preparation for this week. So we'll try to use that.
When you say an offense is efficient, what numbers are you using to come to that conclusion?
Well, they're scoring points. They're scoring points and they're doing it well. Quarterback's throwing 72% completion right now, 5 touchdowns, no picks. That's pretty darn good, He's been sacked just a few times, So that's a big part of it. Their running game has been solid as well. So I'm looking at their offense when I'm saying that, but that's what I had in mind.
Kirk Bush over the years, both with Washington and them, and so just what stands out about him?
Who did you say?
Kirk.
Yeah, Kirk. He looks terrific. He's throwing all of the throws, whether it's the drop back stuff or the action stuff, on the edge. He uses the whole field. He uses all the rhythms. They're good in the quick game. They're good downfield on their play passes, and he's got guys that he can go to that make things happen on the edge outside. So. He's looked really good, and he's accurate, and his arm is strong, and he's taken off a couple times and made some yards. So this is I see him as good as I've ever seen him. I think he looks that sharp starting the season.
Backs already, but Dalvin Cook, how does he sort of compare to the guys you've seen already?
He's really explosive, totally different style of runner than what we just saw, but equally as effective for the most part. I mean, nobody's effective as Derek, but his explosiveness on the edge is really apparent, and it carries over in the throwing game too. They screen him, they dump the ball to him, and he's hard to get down. We have a lot of respect for him.
Run scheme, is there any common thread to what you're going to get this week?
Yeah, they're both zone teams. They're primary zone teams. And running wide zone is their featured plays. Both offenses, it hits differently. And the way you're defending it is different because of the style of the runner. So, but the concept and the principles, they're almost calling the same plays.
How has the different schemes up front for you the last 2 weeks worked out?
We had a ton of plays last week that I was really pleased with. If you're talking about the running game now, we had 28 plays or something, 4 or less or whatever, which is a lot of plays, at the line of scrimmage. And we gave up, really the one big play, but they ran it 40 times, and so they're going to get some yards when they do that, but you give up 60 yards, all your numbers are screwed up. So we played scheme wise well, with a couple exceptions, and that's what happens. So you have to do it play after play after play forever, particularly against a great running back, and he just keeps waiting, and he explodes like he's done. We went a long time in that game without letting that happen, and then it finally did. It's unfortunate for us. His strength is really coming back, and from what I heard today, they tested him for the first time in 3 or 4 days, and so I don't know what that means yet, but his strength came way back from where it was, so he's feeling much better. We've got to find out if that's enough to let him play. I don't know yet. It's elbow related. Yeah, so there's some tricep in there, but it is right at the. That's why I said elbow, and then you said, oh no, or I said tricep, and you guys said elbow because we had said elbow. It's in that area. Okay.
We'll practice.
You want to get more specific than that? It's kind of anyway. Not good.
Zach, right, to the first 2 weeks. How has Daniil Hunter returning impacted
him? He's got 4 sacks already. He's flying, and he's hungry for it. You can tell he's really coming off the ball well, and he's had a couple of those 4 that were just effort sacks. That when the quarterback was moving and he had to, it wasn't just a pure pass rush win. He's playing really hard. He's a terrific player.
Lineup make things easier for the rest of their defensive line too.
Any guy that's that dominant in pass rush, he affects it. He affects you. They saw the on the other side. We saw Chandler a couple weeks ago just totally affect the whole football team. By the way he played, one guy on the edge can be that kind of an impact player. I don't know if they're getting Everson Griffin back or not, but he's been like that in the past, and so that's what Daniil's doing now.
Brandon Shell.
He's still a little sore right now. He won't go today. We'll see what happens as we go day to day here.
What about Rashad Penny?
He's running, and he won't make it this week unless it's a real surprise at the end of the week due to the process that he has to make on ground running and all that.
DK is still okay?
Yeah. He's going today.
DK's performance in the first 2 games?
I think he's been really strong, played really strong. He was really jacked for both games, early in the games, and just tried a little bit too much to have impact. But he's finding his way. He's so prepared to go for it and all that, and he's finding his way. And, he had a couple penalties, that were costly, and because he's really going overboard a little bit, and so he's ready to go. We've talked all about it. He's ready to go.
Are those going to be the guy at right tackle if Shell can't go? Jamarco, maybe.
Jamarco's a possibility if he couldn't go, and Jake also. Jake had a really nice preseason, so but we would go with experience first if that's where we go.
There've been a couple scuffles that DK has been involved in the first 2 games. Is that kind of the same thing? Like maybe he's too into it right now, or?
No, he's finding out kind of the boundaries to play within. He's so physical that he finds himself in those situations where he's kind of overwhelming a guy at times, and so he just needs to know that how the officials are calling it and when to take your hands up and all that. And I'm okay about what he's trying to do. He's battling and he's competing like crazy, but we have to do it within the guidelines, and so that's really important. It's kind of that messaging is important for our whole club after last week. We had a lot of things happen that we didn't need to have happen. Stuff that happened after the play was finished, and we gave away a ton of yards and situations that we have to do better at. And he was part of that.
We always hear with receiver quarterback duos when they've been together a while about the chemistry. With Tyler and Russ, was there a time you really noticed that?
I don't know, John, when the time would be, but yeah, has it been noticed? Yes, for a number of years. I don't know any specific stuff. One of the culmination of that recognition would be the pass that Russ hits him against the Rams, in the corner of the end zone. One of the most perfect plays you could ever see in a game, and that was like, if you didn't believe it then when are you going to believe it? But it's really an exciting thing to watch in sports when you see players that have so much talent and so much awareness, and then you get them together, and then they can work off of each other, and help each other and take their play to such a level. These two guys are just phenomenal. I'm talking about Russ and Tyler are just phenomenal all around, athletes and competitors and gifted, performers, and it. They bring out the best in each other always. Consistently they do, and it's really marvelous to watch.
What's been your impression of how Kyle Fuller's played these first 2 games?
He's played good solid football. He's played good strong football. He's had a couple errors in there that kind of first time starter errors that I wish would go away quickly. You know, a little snap early and a couple things that have happened at the line of scrimmage. Things that really are totally on us to command. And physically, he's done well. He's strong. He's tough. And he's really done a good job making the calls up front. No, he's been very consistent.
We see the touchdown in big plays with Tyler. What part of his game at this point might be underappreciated by, you know, casual fans or even others around the league?
I don't know. Maybe they just haven't paid enough attention to the extraordinary plays that he continues to make. The gifted plays way down the field, and just makes him look so easy and so graceful. He's such a smooth athlete. That, you know, maybe it just they don't see the power. They don't see the explosion. You know, maybe he's really fast. You know, and I don't know that. You know, Evans in the play that he broke last week. You know, they weren't even close to catching him. I don't know, he has been kind of under the radar, you know, in a sense, but, you know, so.
Coach, he's doing pretty good.
He's been compensated really well. We know it, we recognize it, you know, so he's doing just fine.
Coach, in this new offense, is there anything that Russ has had to get better at or learn that he didn't know before, that or something different that he didn't have to do?
We're going to get better at it because of the intricacies of it. We're just going to get better. You know, we're just going to improve as we go because it takes time. It takes reps. You know, these are the first two games we played together, and so I would say 3-4 weeks from now, it will you'll see us continue to take advantage of all of the hard work that's come, you know, before it, and where we can. It's always about minimizing your bad swings. You know, that's a golf reference right there, in case you're wondering, Greg. You know, and just clearing it up, you know, and being more precise and all that, and consistent. So it's good. We're going to get better. Is there stuff? Yeah, it's just feeling comfortable with it, playing really fast with it, really, you know, quickly responsive and taking advantage of what we're looking for and what the call has to offer and stuff like that. So there's still a real upside.
Second half of both games, your offensive production hasn't been what you wanted. Have you seen anything in common?
I would like us to be able to run the ball better in the fourth quarter. Yeah, I wish that was happening when you get ahead. You know, it's nice to be able to do that. And it's always been the way that we love to finish games. And so I'm just hoping that we'll continue to develop so that when we need it, we can go to it. And that's why balance is so important. That's why, you know, you guys always want to know, well, you talk about the running game. Well, there's a reason why. It's really nice when you can pound the clock down and own the finish of the football game. It just hasn't happened as well as we would like. You know, we've been ahead in both those games, and we need to just finish this last one better than we did. So, and that's part of it.
Was D practicing? Eskridge.
How do you evaluate Jamal so far with his pass rushing opportunities? And I guess, generally speaking.
No, he's been aggressive. He's been really going after it, and just like, you know, we expect him to. You're not going to be able to keep him down. He's going to make some plays, you know, we love what he's doing. So we're going to keep using him, you know, and he's just an explosive play waiting to happen, you know, and so he's going forward.
How often you're using him in that role? Is that more?
It depends. Yeah, it's really week to week, and it depends on what's available and all that. And we're sending him sometimes, you know, for effect, you know, and so that they got to deal with him. And he really brings it. So the production, you know, he missed his first sack, the first third down of the season, you know, because he was at 2 inches off sides. You know, that would have been a nice start to the whole thing. But he'll make plenty of plays.
What kind of freedom does he have to take shots, even when it's not necessarily called?
He does have a certain amount of freedom, as all of our players do. You know, if you know what the situation is and what the opportunity is presented, we want to go for it. You know, we're trying to go for it, not outside the guidelines of the defense or the scheme ever on either side of the ball. You know, but you know, I'm always encouraging guys, and particularly guys that I know have it in them and have the instincts to go and to take shots. I'm looking for the opportunities for them to do that, and I try to gauge that as we go. And I know that there's a fine line there, you know, about going too far and taking chances that are outside of the scheme. One of the great
take a shot guys we ever had was Michael Bennett. And, you know, Michael needed guidelines, but yet you needed to let him go too, or he wouldn't make the plays that he would make. And so there was a little bit of plus minus there at times. And you know, we always hoped to, and for the most part, you know, he was great at it, you know. And so now there's guys that could do that carelessly, and we won't let them do that. You know, we'll restrict them, and that's for sure. But the guys that have the natural and that sense and that go for it, you know, mentality, you know, like Russ, you know, we got to let him have his chance to do those kinds of things. That the great things won't happen as often. So that's it.
Was the Henry run, was that a play where he saw something and took a shot, Jamal?
He fit it up really aggressively, and so aggressively that the spacing between he and Trey got bigger than normal, because he went so hard. He's trying to make the play in the backfield, you know. And so we have to learn our guys. And it's just like, I go back to the Mike. I heard Mike Bennett was in town last week is what I'm thinking of him. But we had to compensate for Mike sometimes so that he could go ahead and have those freedoms. And there's some similarity there. There's some real coaching points that we also employ right here to do it, where you don't get vulnerable by going too far too fast, you know. So I mean, we're coaching the heck out of that.
More of the Huddle coming your way next. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We got a great interview with Alton Robinson coming your way in just a few minutes. Before we get to that, some Seahawks injury updates from Pete Carroll's press conference. Right tackle Brandon Shell with an ankle sprain is day-to-day. If he cannot go, Jamarco Jones will likely start in his place. Meanwhile, defensive tackle Brian Monet is feeling much better after injuring his elbow/triceps area. He, though, is still TBD for week 3. Likely out for week 3 is running back Rashad Penny with a calf injury. He wasn't placed on the injured reserve, which means that it was expected he'd miss no more than 3 weeks. That would be the minimum amount required for IR, so he could be back next week, although doesn't look like he's going to go this week. Any quick reactions to that, Jake?
Any quick reactions? I think that when you're talking about Eskridge, it to me, it's a bummer that you're not able to get him out on the field. It's a bummer that he's not able to make the recovery as quickly as you were hoping. And quite frankly, it's a very difficult thing to understand and to know exactly what the timeline is. It's not a easy injury to recover from because it's so unknown and so unexpected, but he's definitely going to be a missing piece that you would love to have out there and love to get his speed on the field.
Yeah, Eskridge seemed optimistic Pete Carroll seemed optimistic that Eskridge could return for week 3, but he is not practicing today as he presumably goes through that concussion protocol. So it'll be interesting to see when he's finally back out there. I think not having Rashad Penny, obviously it's a bummer because you'd like to see him bounce back and try to make the most of what's, under contract his final year in Seattle. But I think you feel okay knowing that you have Chris Carson, knowing that Alex Collins had that great 25-yard run last week. He looked great for you, so it could be another big opportunity for him.
No, I do, and I'm not concerned about it because I do have that much faith in not only Carson, but Alex Collins as well as your backup option. And I think that they're in a really good spot there. So it doesn't put you behind offensively in that situation. And, you know, if anything, you were hoping that Rashad Penny would pop and that he would add to what you have. But you're certainly not expecting him or relying on him to propel the offense forward. So it's not as big of a hit. It would just be a nice addition, too. So I think that Eskridge is a bigger deal. I think not having Brian Monet out there potentially is a bigger deal than the Penny injury, for sure.
Now, one interesting thing, I mentioned we'd be speaking with Alton Robinson. Well, this from Seahawks reporter John Boyle. It sounds like Alton Robinson will see more playing time this week. This is what Pete Carroll said. If anybody is clamoring for more, me too. He needs to be out there more. He's been so effective, even in limited snaps for this team.
He has, but also isn't this something that we talked about last year? Like this was this
yeah,
was
last
also
year he was a rookie.
Yeah, but last year this is something that Pete Carroll also said. So you know, I know that there's other guys that you signed and may have been ahead of Alton Robinson, but I would have liked to have seen him get more active snaps and be more active a part of the rotation. So I mean, maybe we see this happen and it happens by necessity this next week, and that'll be a very good thing because he's obviously popped and shows explosion.
Speaking of that, he had a strip sack. Kerry Hyder with the fumble recovery led to a Chris Carson touchdown last week. A great play by him. We're going to ask him about that next. Alton Robinson joins us on the Huddle coming your way in a few minutes.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Single setback with a tight slot to the right side. Play fake to Henry. He gets hit. Ball comes out. Seahawks jump on it. Seahawks football at the 5-yard line of Tennessee. Ryan Tannehill never saw it coming. I'm not sure who got through, but Kerry Hyder recovered. I believe it was Alton Robinson who got through for the sack, the forced fumble, and the Seahawks defense. Wow, have they hit their stride.
Joining us right now on the Huddle is Seahawks defensive lineman Alton Robinson. Alton, I have to start by saying congratulations. That was a heck of a play last week with sacking Carson Wentz, forcing that fumble. Can you walk us through what happened?
Yeah, it was just it was a pass play I was able to be in on, and I just took advantage of the opportunity to be out there and was able to get the hit and cause the ball to come out.
How good did that feel to be able to get that hit on Ryan Tannehill and to be able to get that ball, a strip sack?
Oh, man, it's the best play in football. It felt so good to just lay heavy on a quarterback again.
Now, Alton, you haven't been able to have the luxury of playing in front of the 12s, and so you had this big, huge moment, and I'm sure that stadium was rocking and going crazy. How cool was that?
Man, it was one of the best feelings I had in a long time, you know what I mean, to be able to play in front of fans and to get everybody rocking the way they did. It was fantastic.
I've been getting into, I'm going to say, some tiffs, some debates with people, because I think the expectations should be high for the defense. You guys have so much talent, a great defensive-minded head coach. What are your expectations for yourself, like, as a, let's say, that side of the ball this year? What are your guys' expectations as a defense?
I think our expectation is to just, you know, play how we know we can play, you know what I mean? And every day we come to work ready to go, knowing that it's another day to get better. So I think just playing to the level that we know we can play at is the expectation of the whole defense.
Alton, with a, you know, tough loss like that, what are some of the conversations that you guys are having internally to, you know, learn from the mistakes that happened in that game, but like you said, move forward heading into this next week, a big game against the Vikings?
Just finishing, you know what I mean? We had them down, and we just got to learn to finish. And not only learn it, but just stay true to it. And just when we got them down, keep our foot down, you know, no letting up.
You know, Alton, one of the unique situations, and I can't imagine how hard this is, because, you know, I played quarterback, and there's only one quarterback that is on the field. You have the ball in your hands. You get into the rhythm of the game. For you and for a defensive line, you guys are in a rotation, and some of you guys are more specialists in terms of the way that you fit into the defense and the pass rush and your ability and what you bring to the table. How hard is it to, you know, be asked to come into the game and give your very best for a play or two and then come off and then come back on? What is that like?
I wouldn't say it's hard. More is, I would almost say it's a little bit reversed. Makes it more exciting, you know, waiting there to play the whole time. And then, you know, you get out there, it's easier to give your full effort and everything like that, because you don't know when the opportunity is going to come back. So it's not as hard as it may seem.
So the anticipation and the excitement to get out there just remains at an all-time high.
Absolutely.
Alton, I love seeing you drop back into coverage a little bit, too. Tell us about that, man. We saw you kind of turn and run with, that was a wide receiver that you were running with. I know he made the catch, but geez, you had great coverage on him. Is that all new to you? How much have you been working on that?
I've been working on it quite a bit this off season and through the season, as you've seen. But it's fairly new. It's not too new, but it's new that them throwing the ball and actually, you know, them counting on me. It's not like it's always under pressure or anything like that. So just knowing where to go is the big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and I love that you ran with him in the out and up. I mean, that's something that linebackers, you know, and DBs know. And then the other thing was, like, you were all over him. I mean, the guy made a great catch, but I just thought it was really good coverage. I was like, is that a defensive end out there? Man, that was a nice job.
Thank you.
Hey, Alton, I don't know if you remember this, but Jake and I interviewed you in training camp, kind of just talking about all kinds of different things. And one of the things we asked you was, which player do you look up to? But then, like, DK Metcalf came over and grabbed a mic and was interviewing you. Do you remember this? Was
it, yes,
this, yeah, he was. Who was the person he said, like, you said you looked up to? Who do you model your game after? And he said, oh, I've got his number. I'll put you in contact.
Marcellus.
Tell me that Whitney. He did that. Did he do that?
We actually haven't been able to get in contact with him yet, but I know he was talking about probably for the next offseason because we're so busy with the season right now.
Oh, that's awesome. Man.
Yeah, that's cool. I hope you're able to actually make that happen because
I was
going
to try
really
to
cool.
hold him accountable.
Yeah, we're
going to try to help you out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Alton, we're not going to let it go, and we're going to make sure that DK follows through on his promises.
I got 110% faith in DK that he will do that.
Hey, Alton, tell us, I thought you had a great rookie year, man, coming in and getting four sacks. And I think, I want to say your first play against Dallas, you had a tackle for a loss on Ezekiel Elliott. It was a really good start. How much more comfortable did you feel coming back for your second year? I know you've been working with Cliff Avril also a little bit in the offseason.
Yeah, it was I was a little more comfortable, you know, because I knew what to expect coming into the second season. You know, the first season was kind of like, okay, I'm the new kid. Yeah. I got to kind of feel my way through it a little bit. But coming back this season, I was able to have my nerves a little bit more calmed and just know what to expect, not only from the Seahawks, but from what other teams are trying to do to the Seahawks. So in that regard, I was a little bit more comfortable.
Alton, still a young player in this league, second year. You've had your opportunity to play against some firsts. This is the first time I went up against this player, that player. How unique was it to go up against Derrick Henry? What was that like? And then is there anybody else that has stood out to you so far that you've gotten to play against that either you were excited for or just walked away from going, wow, that guy was really unique?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Derrick didn't wow me too much because, you know, he's, you know, been doing it for so long now. Like, it's almost like to be expected. But being out there with him, he definitely was a bigger body. It was like, damn, this is the end running the ball right now. But I would say that's one guy. But another one was Trent Williams last year. You know, he was a little banged up, but that was another guy I walked away from. Like, all right, I got a chance to go against Trent because he was, you know, one of the best to do it for the past couple years. So those are probably the two that I would say are the mains. But
I like
other
it.
Than that, we'll see. I know we got a couple of games coming up here that I'm excited for.
Pretty soon people will be saying, you know, that Alton Robinson, that's the guy that he was my welcome to the NFL moment.
Love that. All right, he is Seahawks defensive end Alton Robinson. Alton, it's been fun to talk to you, man. We can't wait to see you get even more snaps out here. You've been a fun player to watch.
Appreciate you guys. Take care.
More of The Huddle coming your way next. Don't go anywhere.